Hello there, and welcome to episode number 138 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. Okay, so it's arbitration fallout day. That's what we're going to loosely call this here, because after much anticipation, we finally received the arbitration details for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who had to go through an arbitration hearing with the Blue Jays because both sides could not agree as to what his salary would be for the 2024 season. And for those of you who have been living under a rock this whole time, I'll recap the situation here for you. Last month, when the Blue Jays and Vladdy could not agree to a deal by the arbitration deadline, which was January 11th, both sides had to exchange salary figures. The Blue Jays came in at $18.05 million, which is a very specific Ross Atkins type number to offer out. And Vladdy, meanwhile, came back at the Blue Jays at $19.9 million, which again, very similar type of Atkins-esque demand, where it's not precisely an even number, but it's close enough to it. So little humorous in that sense. But on Tuesday, both sides, because they weren't able to hammer out a bridge deal like we saw with Bo Bichette last year, both sides had to enter an arbitration hearing. They presented their cases to a third-party arbitration panel, and on Wednesday, those details were shared, or at least the outcome of that hearing was shared, and as a result, the panel favored in Vladdy's side, where he will now earn $19.9 million in 2024. So he won. The Blue Jays lost. What we don't know, however, is any of the details regarding that hearing and what was said by both parties in that meeting. And obviously, we all know how potentially harmful and toxic arbitration hearings can be. Right, there have been so many different cases of it over the year. If you want to think solely about the Blue Jays history, you can think back to 6 years ago, which seems like forever ago, when the Blue Jays and Marcus Stroman went to arbitration. And notably, Stroman came out of that meeting and went to Twitter, like he loves to do, even to this day, and tweeted out something in the sense of that, you know, he will never forget what was said in that meeting by the Blue Jays. And if we want to think of a more recent example as well, also back to the Blue Jays point, Ryan Tepera as well. I believe it was 2019 that the Blue Jays took him to arbitration. And he was extremely upset. One, that he lost, but two, with what was said by the Blue Jays. And there was only like I think it was $200,000 or $300,000 difference between, or the gap between both sides at that point with Tepera. Not like the near $2 million gap that was withstanding between the Blue Jays and Vladdy's camp. But again, if we want to think of a more recent example than Stroman and Tepera, you can look back to just last winter with Corbin Burnes and the Milwaukee Brewers. And I remember watching the clip of Burnes just express his disappointment with how the meeting went. And the fact that, like, essentially the Brewers blamed Burnes for the fact that they weren't able to make the playoffs in 2022. Right? They painted that on him, even though that wasn't necessarily true. Right, you think back to the 2022 season where the Brewers were like on the fringe of the playoffs. They were actually probably the favorite to win the division until, well, maybe not, the Cardinals were still probably the favorite. But once they traded Josh Hader, that just sent an irreversible shockwave throughout the organization, and one they couldn't recover from. So it wasn't Burns' fault. He didn't have a great 2022, but like, again, in arbitration hearings, the objective is to make your case as to why you believe the player that you're fighting against is not worth what he's claiming. That's what the Brewers did during that 2022-2023 offseason. And Corbin Burns isn't a member of the Brewers anymore. Unfortunately, he's now with the Baltimore Orioles. But nevertheless, that hearing caused irreversible damage on their long-term relationship. Yes, Burns was close to free agency, and the Brewers knew they couldn't afford to pay him what he wanted anyway. But it didn't help that the relationship was shattered by that arbitration hearing. And for a player of Vladdy's caliber, numbers aside, right? Because, you know, I've heard multiple people voice their opinions about this matter. And to me, it's regardless of where you fall on the matter, if you're, you know, if you're a Vladdy fan, if you're not, you can't disregard the fact that he has the potential to be a franchise cornerstone. He hasn't necessarily delivered on that expectation consistently. Actually, he hasn't, outside of 2021 and to some extent 2022. But regardless of the inconsistencies that we've seen from Vladdy, we all know that he has that potential to be the face of a franchise. And when a player has that type of stature, I just don't love the fact that the Blue Jays dug their heels in so much that it led to an arbitration hearing. Obviously, there were a number of factors at play, right? Like, Vladdy's inconsistencies ultimately led to the fact that both sides weren't able to agree on what his salary should be for the 2024 season. But that alone is something to really harp on too, because obviously we don't know what model the Blue Jays use and are currently using to determine their players' value. But in Vladdy's case, from his perspective, he certainly had a ton of ground to stand on to demand that he was worth $19.9 million. So let me explain here, because there's a few things that I want to break down here and outline. Not to say that, like, I'm picking one side or the other. I'm just looking at the facts. Basically what the arbitration panel also did. And saying, look, I see these two figures. I see these two salary numbers. From the facts that I'm seeing, I believe Vladdy's $19.9 million is more reflective of what his value should be next season. So, if we look at some comparisons, because that's what arbitration really is, it's drawing comparisons to other players and previous situations as well. So, one of the clearest comparisons for Vladdy is New York's Pete Alonso. Like, throughout their careers, their trajectories their salaries have been very comparable. You know, you look at even last season, where they made the same amount. They both settled to avoid arbitration at $14.5 million. Now, obviously, Pete Alonso had a much better 2023 season than Vladdy. Right? Pete hit 46 home runs, drove in 118, posted a 504 slugging percentage, and was worth almost three wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. Vladdy, underwhelming, right? We all know this. 26 home runs, 94 RBIs, 444 slug, 118 WRC plus, and he was worth just one win above replacement. Let me expand the situation for you too. Let's take the last three seasons together, collectively, between both Alonso and Guerrero. Alonso has hit more home runs than Vladdy. He's got more RBIs, a slightly higher slugging percentage, 513 combined versus Vladdy's 508. Pete also has a higher isolated power than Vladdy, 263 versus 225. However, Vladdy beats him in every other category. Shocking, but it's true. Vladdy has a higher batting average, on base percentage, WOBA, WRC plus, right? From 21 to 23, Vladdy's WRC plus is at 139, Pete's 131. And if we look at WAR over the last three seasons, Vladdy has been worth a combined 10.1 wins above replacement per Fangraphs. Pete Alonso, 9.9. What is Pete Alonso making in 2024? $20.5 million. That'd be a big difference from $18.05 million. Now, I'm not finished here. Let me throw something else at you, too. We want to look at season-to-season raises here, like salary raises. Pete Alonso got a $6 million raise from 2022 to 2023, and he earned it, right? Had a phenomenal 2023 season. The Blue Jays were proposing that Vladdy receive a $3.55 million raise from the 2023 season to 2024. Vladdy was asking for $5.4 million in a raise. If we want to look at another comparison, we can look at Juan Soto. In 2022, his season wasn't anywhere near as dominant as it was in 2021. And yet, in his third time through arbitration, he earned a $5.9 million raise. Now, part of that is because he plays a more valuable position than Vladdy as an outfielder versus a first baseman. But that's kind of regardless. And the fact that, you know, Vladdy is or was in his third arbitration year, and he was asking for a $5.4 million raise. You look at Alonso, who got a $6 million raise. You look at Soto, who got a $5.9 million raise, despite coming off a relatively down season. So all those examples show you that Vladdy was well within his right to command the figure he wanted. And even if you look at a projection model of MLB trade rumors, who over the years have been very accurate, they had Vladdy at a projected $20.4 million, right? Much like basically what Alonso settled for. And Vladdy was asking for less than that. So, you know, I'm glad. I'm glad that Vladdy won and the arbitrators were able to see all of the evidence here and decipher the fact that, yeah, Vladdy is absolutely worth $19.9 million, despite the fact that he's coming off an underwhelming season. So, this brings me back to the fact that, what are the Blue Jays doing here? Like, it's worth pointing out, too, that because this went to an arbitration hearing, Vladdy set the record for the highest amount awarded by an arbitration panel, surpassing Teoscar Hernandez from last winter. And this not only affects the Blue Jays, but it affects the rest of Major League Baseball too. Like, all 29 other teams were heavily interested in this situation because this now sets a precedent for future players who are in similar situations, and they now can point to Vladdy as an example to help their case. So I see why the Blue Jays had a motive in at least trying to argue their case, but you know, the fact that, according to Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, that no negotiations transpired between January 11th, the arbitration deadline, and Vladdy's arbitration hearing on Tuesday is very damning. Because again, I thought it made all the sense in the world for both sides to come to terms on a bridge deal, like the Blue Jays did with Bo Bichette last winter. Now, it's a little different because they were buying out three arbitration years rather than two. And as we can decipher from this recent event, where both sides couldn't even agree on what Guerrero's 2024 salary would have been, I can also understand why they would have had so much trouble trying to negotiate a two-year deal, right? Because how do you decide what Vladdy's salary is going to be in 2025 when you can't even agree on what his salary should be in 2024. And again, what model are the Blue Jays using? There were so many examples that Vladdy's camp could point to that we just laid out that would side in his favor. Like, why drag this out to an arbitration hearing if you're the Blue Jays? And you know that he's going to point to all of these certain things. I understand that the Blue Jays could also point to his 2023 underperformance, right? And the fact that, again, he was only worth one win above replacement. But it's not just about 2023 performance either. So I really, really hope that nothing too displeasing was said in that meeting, but we won't know until, you know, I guess a week plus time, where Vladdy reports to spring training, you know, and in the first day where pitchers and catchers for the Blue Jays are due to report is on February 15th. I wouldn't think that we'll see Vladdy in camp by then, but at the same time, we already know he's been training in Florida, so there's a very good chance that he'll at least be at the facility in Dunedin next week. So at that point, you know, whether it's February 15th or it's a few days after, Vladdy's going to get asked about the arbitration hearing. Like Bo Bichette was, well, it wasn't about the arbitration hearing, but he was asked about, you know, coming to terms on a deal at the 11th hour, essentially. And there's also a good chance, too, that, you know, Bichette would have held it against the Blue Jays more than somebody like Guerrero, just because of their personalities. But I just, I don't see the risk versus reward part. Like, I think there was far more risk than potential reward for the Blue Jays to take Vladdy to arbitration. I really do. I understand the obstacles to determining a two-year, or finding common ground on a two-year deal, not to mention a contract extension that bought out for agent years, because God forbid the Blue Jays try and, you know, it's getting a little off topic. I was going to say something that was going to be irrational. I'm going to not stoop to that level. But I was, you know, I was just going to allude to the fact that God forbid the Blue Jays lock up one of their core pieces beyond their arbitration years. But these are also unique circumstances, too, where, you know, the Blue Jays are dealing with two players that, you know, aren't desperate for money either, given their current situations beyond baseball. You know, they're certainly well off in that regard and don't have to settle for pennies on the dollar, you know, like we've seen with previous players in the past. But you know, I still don't think it was worth it. I really don't think it was worth taking Vladdy to an arbitration hearing and risking having that relationship strained with somebody who, you know, even if, let's say, you know, devil's advocate here, let's say Vladdy leaves the Blue Jays in free agency after the next two seasons, even if that transpires, you're reducing your chances of being able to extend him by having something harmful said in that arbitration hearing. You know, even if Vladdy doesn't take it personally, he knows that you were willing to, or not even willing, that you took him to an arbitration hearing to argue that you thought he was worth almost $2 million less than what he believed his worth was. Even if he doesn't take that personally, which may or may not happen, I'm hoping that Vladdy is professional and mature enough that he'll use it as fuel for next season rather than, you know, holding it as a grudge. But he may do both. Regardless of all that, he'll always have that in the back of his mind. Regardless of how he takes this, it would be impossible to not have that linger in the back of your mind. Because as much as we want to put these players up on a pedestal and, you know, think of them as robots at times, or, you know, invincible individuals, they're still people. They're still human beings. They still have real emotions like me and you. So, you know, I just, I really, really, really was hoping that we wouldn't reach this point. We wouldn't get to this point. But alas, here we are, right? and we can't go back in the past and change it. So both sides just have to move on here. And, you know, whatever happens beyond 2025, now's the time to just focus on these next two seasons and maximize the Blue Jays' chances of reaching the World Series and ultimately winning a championship. And for Vlad, the best way he cannot find himself in this position again next winter is going out and absolutely dominating in 2024. Right? He doesn't have to have an MVP caliber season like he did in 2021, but he's got to at least be closer to the 2022 version or somewhere in between 21 and 22 than where he was a season ago. Right? It's very simple for him. He goes out and performs to the capabilities like everyone knows and expects he can. Everything should be smooth sailing next winter. If he doesn't, well, then that's, you know, that's going to make things even more challenging. And we may or may not be back in this position next winter. But again, there's a lot of time between now and then, so we'll see. But for now, now that this arbitration case has been decided on and has a resolution, let's move on here. Let's keep it going and let's turn our attentions back to the offseason here. Because as irate as a lot of us, I'm sure, can be about this whole arbitration situation, things are a lot more, well, uneasy regarding this team's offseason. Because, you know, for the most part, it has been disappointing, right? It hasn't been a good offseason for the Blue Jays. That doesn't mean they haven't made subtle improvements, because I do believe they have done that, even though it may not seem like it. You may have to squint really hard at this roster to determine that. But I also believe that this offseason isn't finished. Now again, right? Like, pitchers and catchers report next week. So we are winding down here. But we also can acknowledge the fact that this Blue Jays team as currently constructed is not better than where it finished at the end of 2023. There's still holes here. There are still there's still obvious holes, or at least one obvious hole that the Blue Jays really need to fill before the start of next season. And that's adding whether you want to call it a platoon or a reserve or a bench bat, whatever the term you want to use, the Blue Jays need another outfielder on this roster. And more specifically, a right-handed hitting outfielder that you can platoon versus left-handed pitching, right? This probably seems like a little bit of deja vu, because it is essentially where, if we want to rewind to 2023, after the Blue Jays added Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho, they were really left-handed in the outfield. And when the Blue Jays were facing left-handed pitching, you had to take one of Varsho or Kiermaier out of the lineup. And the Blue Jays, you know, they were able to deploy Whit Merrifield in left field, and despite his subpar defense, offensively he was, you know, amicable. But now he's no longer employed by the team. And, you know, obviously the Blue Jays could use Isaiah Kiner-Falefa in that role, put him out in left field. He's a really good defender. Offensively, you know, unless the Blue Jays are facing a pitcher who throws a lot of four-seamers and curveballs, probably isn't going to fare all that well. And they could put David Schneider at second base and Justin Turner at third base, as much as I cringe when I say that or write it or see it, because, you know, again, 39-year-old, not a good defender anymore, certainly not at third base. But right now, unless the Blue Jays want to play Kevin Biggio or, hell, Santiago Espinal, and, you know, maybe Espinal's a viable candidate, because as of right now, he's still on this team, even though I expect him to be moved at some point. If that's not at the start of the season, maybe it's closer to the trade deadline. I just don't see where he fits on this team anymore after the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa signing. But yeah, I mean, Espinal is someone who's historically performed well against left-handed pitching. Defensively, outside of last season, he was a good defender. So, you know, maybe you DH Turner mostly against left-handed pitching and you put Espinal at third base and IKF in left field and David Schneider at second base. You know, who knows? Maybe Addison Barger develops quicker than the Blue Jays expect, or Leo Jimenez, or Damiano Palgiamani, or even Aurelvis Martinez, even though I don't think third base is really an option for Martinez. I think he's more second base, but still, you could use him there. You could use Martinez at second base and put David Schneider at third. You know, there are multiple different internal options that the Blue Jays could use, but I really, really think that they could benefit from adding another outfielder, right? Like, all last season, we were begging this team to add a right-handed hitting outfielder. That never came. It never happened. You know, like, I remember writing so many articles, so many tweets, or posts now, outlining who they could target, how they would help this team. It never happened. And it's just like, the Blue Jays need to learn from their mistake. They really do. And there are a number of different options still available in free agency alone. You have Tommy Pham, Robbie Grossman, Adam Duvall. Via trade, you could go target somebody like Austin Slater from the San Francisco Giants, a team that could really benefit from acquiring a player like Santiago Espinal. So, you know, and you even look at on Wednesday, I watched a little bit of Ken Rosenthal's appearance on the Foul Territory podcast, and he listed the Blue Jays as a team that he believes may still have money to spend this offseason. And they could use that remaining spending couple of different ways, right? They could use it directly in free agency. They could use it via trade, and bringing in a more expensive salary than what they would be sending out. But as currently constructed, I just don't think this lineup is good enough to compete for the AL East division, because that is the goal. That should be the goal. Start and finish. Your goal should not be competing for the first wild card spot. The Blue Jays have been there, done that the last few seasons, right? Like, 2023 was the goal of competing for the division, and you just snuck into the playoffs. This team still needs to improve. And especially, too, if you add more offense, theoretically, it should take some more pressure off that pitching staff that was so effective last season, that was among the healthiest in all of baseball last season. Those two things don't usually correlate from season to season. The Blue Jays are betting right now that happens. They do have more depth established beyond the major league level, right? They brought in Yariel Rodriguez, who can help them in the rotation. He can help them in the bullpen. Ricky Tiedemann, hopefully he stays healthy, but he's that much closer to the major league level, as is another pitching prospect in Chad Dallas. You now know a little bit more about Bowden Francis as well. On the relief side, Hagen Danner is somebody who made his major league debut last season. He got a little bit of taste of what, you know, big league hitting is like. Yosper Zulueta, hopefully, you know, he's a little bit healthier. He's not battling through any knee soreness or anything, and he can bounce back a little bit more. Whatever happens with Mitch White, who's out of options and, you know, had a strong finish to last season, and but, you know, as of right now, he's set to be designated for assignment by the end of spring training. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him. But there is more depth there in the pipeline at AAA that, you know, if guys underperform, if injuries arise, the Blue Jays should be able to cover up those issues a little bit better than they did in 2023, where, like, you were forced to roll with a four-man rotation and call upon Trevor Richards as an opener a few different times when Alek Manoah's nightmare 2023 season unfolded. But getting back to the offensive side of things, you know, like, I didn't get a chance to fully break down the Justin Turner signing last week because of all the technical issues that happened and unfolded, unfortunately. But now that we're, you know, I've had an extra week to digest this move and further dive into his metrics, you know, like, as underwhelming as that signing is, especially with Jorge Soler and JD Martinez still out there, among others, you can see why the Blue Jays targeted and ultimately acquired a player like Turner. You know, like, the postseason accolades, the resume speaks for itself. Last season, the, you know, successful performance that he had with the Boston Red Sox, you know, the fact that he battled through things in the second half of the season that certainly impacted his results too. Those are well documented as well. But again, he's 39 years old, so, you know, injuries aren't going anywhere. But there's one thing that's stuck out to me a lot recently regarding Turner and what the Blue Jays have done with their lineup so far this winter. And it's kind of, this topic has flown under the radar a little bit, and it's just how ineffective a lot of their middle of the order contributors were in pivotal, or more specifically, high leverage situations last season. You know, specifically, if we want to look at results in high leverage situations, in terms of WRC plus, weighted runs created plus, the five worst hitters on the Blue Jays in that statistic were Whit Merrifield, Dalton Varsho, Brandon Belt, Matt Chapman, and Alejandro Kirk. Of those five, we saw four of those players a lot of the time hit in the middle of the order, right? And have a sizable amount of run scoring opportunities, and they failed to deliver, right? You look at Brandon Belt specifically. In high leverage situations last season, he earned 42 plate appearances. He struck out 40.5% of the time in those opportunities. 40.5% of the time, right? And that does match the eye test a lot, where we would see Brandon Belt come up with, you know, runners in scoring position, or come up and late in games in a one-run game or something like that, and he'd fail to deliver. He'd strike out or pop up or whatever. And, you know, the numbers match the eye test. And he's been swapped out for Justin Turner, who over the last three seasons has been extraordinarily effective in high leverage situations. In those three seasons, he's compiled 172 plate appearances. He slashed 320, 372, 565 with a 245 isolated power, a 389 wOBA, and a 148 WRC plus. And if we want to look at strikeouts specifically, he's only struck out 17.4% of the time in high leverage situations since 2021, right? Like, that's a major drop, a major improvement from the near 50% strikeout rate that Belt had in those opportunities last season. And Matt Chapman too, right? Like, a 65 WRC plus in high leverage situations last season, right? There were 12 Blue Jays players that earned at least 30 plate appearances in high leverage situations last season. Chapman's 65 WRC plus was second worst, only ahead of Kirk's 36. And, you know, with Turner hopefully hitting behind Guerrero and ahead of Kirk, you know, you're just hoping that Kirk isn't anywhere near as poor as he was last season. Because that's, you know, even though he didn't strike out a lot in those situations, he only had a 163 average. Right? Like, those were a lot of wasted opportunities. Like, no wonder the Blue Jays struggled scoring runs last season and struggled with runners in scoring position. Like, look at all the players that were performing in those opportunities, right? Like Kirk, Varsho, Belt, Chapman, like they were all ineffective. And Merrifield too, right? Like Merrifield earned the second most plate appearances in high leverage situations last season and was a below average hitter in those opportunities with his 87 WRC plus, right? Like Vladdy led the team in high leverage plate appearances at 76. Merrifield had 71, the next highest, right? You take all of those away and you give them to somebody else, you know, these type of statistics aren't predictive, right? Like it's not a guarantee that from season to season these are going to replicate, but you know, the fact that we have three seasons worth of results for Turner and to see that he's been this reliable, this effective, as long as the Blue Jays can put him in positions to succeed, there's no reason why he shouldn't continue to be that effective of a run producer, in my opinion. But again, like hearing all of those results and all of those underperformances, it just goes to show you that the Blue Jays need more depth, more middle of the order depth that they don't currently have. And, you know, unless something drastic happens, I don't see Cody Bellinger coming to this team. I don't see Matt Chapman coming back. You know, purely financial reasons with both players. JD Martinez does not seem like a fit whatsoever because he's a full-time DH and you're already committing so many DH reps to Turner. You can't have two aging primary DHs on the team. It just doesn't work. There are a lot of wasted opportunities. There are a lot of just, you're essentially wasting a bench spot there. Because it would just be so challenging to have both of those players in the lineup regularly. Like you'd be sacrificing a lot of defense to have to do that. Not to mention you're risking having Turner suffer an injury too, which then just defeats the whole purpose here. And Soler, like, if his price were to drop specifically the term, then, you know, maybe the Blue Jays re-enter that market. But as long as he continues to hold out for, you know, a 3-year deal, I don't see the Blue Jays meeting that demand. And I think some other team will step up and give Soler more opportunities than what the Blue Jays can offer him at this point. So that's why, you know, it brings me back to the fact that if this team adds a platoon right-handed hitting outfielder, then, you know, it's not a perfect offseason. It's far from a great offseason, but it's sufficient, or at least in my mind, it would be sufficient. So if they end up with a Tommy Pham or a Robbie Grossman or an Adam Duvall or an Austin Slater, a Taylor Ward maybe in Los Angeles, or a Lane Thomas, you know, even Willie Adames would be nice. But unfortunately, I don't see the Blue Jays giving up a haul of future assets for somebody that only has one season of club control remaining. He would address a lot of concerns for the Blue Jays. He'd provide great defense at third base. He would certainly add a lot of pop to the middle of their order. But I think, honestly, I can see the Blue Jays holding, or the Blue Jays, the Brewers holding on to Adames into the season. And you know, if things don't work out for them, which it probably won't now that they've traded Corbin Burns, then I would think that they look to trade Adames closer to the trade deadline. And then maybe at that point, the Blue Jays, you know, express more interest into the matter. But it all depends to what happens at third base for them as well, right? Like, who emerges, who takes the reins of the spot, even though multiple players are probably going to rotate through both third base and second base next season. But we'll see. But I think as for right now, you know, aside from making some minor league deals, which I could definitely see them making, you know, we've all heard that Tony Kemp rumors out there, right? And if they're going to bring in a guy like that who had such an awful 2023 season, there's no doubt in my mind he'd be coming in on a minor league deal. I think it'd be insanely foolish to give that, to just assure a player like that a major league roster spot. He'd have to earn it, honestly. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, if this team adds one more bat between now and opening day, then they'll at least be in a respectable spot. Certainly not one that's, or certainly not as good as a position as, you know, it looked like they may be at the beginning of the offseason when they were devoting so many resources to pursuing Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, and both of those pursuits came up empty. But again, you also have to keep in mind too that Juan Soto's a free agent next season, after next season, right? So I've said this a few times throughout the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays continue to make these short-term additions and go out next offseason and make a run at, you know, Alex Bregman, Juan Soto, and next winter as well with, or 2 winters from now with Bichette and Guerrero both due to enter free agency, right? Like, the Blue Jays aren't going to accept that, or they're not going to willingly allow this competitive window to just abruptly stop after these next 2 seasons. They're going to be doing everything they can to try and extend this window as long as possible. And part of that could be extending Bichette or Guerrero or both. But if they can't, don't be surprised if they go out and make serious runs at other marquee free agents too. So, but that's a conversation for another day. And that does it for this week's episode. Hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update, when we'll actually be able to talk about real baseball again, because we'll be all that much closer to the start of spring training games. But Until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.